Can you believe we've done 25 of these things?
I can't. It's gone by really quickly.
You think?
Yeah.
You sure?
You know, time flies when you're having fun.
That's right.
The Doc and Carolyn Podcast.
Right. Welcome to number 25 of the Doc and Carolyn Podcast. It's National Police Week.
Happy Police Week.
Thank you. I appreciate that. We didn't really put together a show to highlight police because you're going to have police stuff coming out your earballs if you listen to this podcast. So, but I do want to tell a cop story. This one has a pretty happy ending. I was doing patrol work and got dispatched to a assault run, and I got there, and there was a lady probably in her 50s, you know, and she had been punched in the mouth.
What?
And, you know, big swollen lip. So I talked to her, asked what happened, and she pointed the guy out. The guy was still there. Said, that right there, he hit me in the mouth. So I got the information from her and went over and talked to him. Hey, did you hit this lady in the mouth? He was like, yeah. He said, yeah, I did. Okay, why? You know, why? You know, it's just a matter of fact. And he says, I'm going to be honest with you, officer. She has been following me around, trying to offer me sexual favors in exchange for crack. And she's been doing it for the last few hours, just following me around. Finally got tired of it and just cacked her in the mouth. So he admitted it. Also admitted the fact that he was a drug dealer. But
no.
You know, he didn't have any on him, but so I took the report and after that got to know her really well. She was always on my beat, always in the middle of the drug trade there, either dealing with the dope boys or getting assaulted or assaulting somebody else. I just got to know her real well. And she told me about her children. She told me about her grandchildren. So to give you an idea how tough this life is, I was hanging with her for 8 hours between runs. You know, I'd get radio runs and go have to handle something. Then I'd come right back to my beat and find her. And keep in mind, she was not happy to see me when I found her. I got cussed out just trying to dissuade her from the behavior. I ended up getting transferred into a drug unit and I lost track of her for about 18 months, maybe 2 years. Didn't see her at all until one day everybody in the unit broke for lunch. We were doing some operation. We were all in line together in plain clothes at McDonald's. And I hear, Freckle! That was my Freckle was my nickname. And then this lady comes running from around the corner. I didn't even recognize her and started screaming and running at me.
Oh no.
And I'm looking around. I'm like, you know, get my pistol out. I don't know what's going on. And she came up and she gave me this huge hug and I recognized it was her, but she looked radiant. She looked beautiful, you know, compared to how she had put some weight on.
Yeah.
Just hair, nails, eyes, everything was just, she just looked wonderful. And she says, thank you. I just want to thank you. Thank you. And this is in a restaurant, lunchtime, full of customers. She says, thank you, Freckle. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. She said, I got cleaned up. She said, I'm an assistant manager here now.
Oh, wow.
And if you have anybody that was like me, send them to me. Because as long as they can get clean, I'll get a job for them. And I'll get them on the path. I'll show them what I did. You know, they can learn the restaurant business. And so happy Police Week. And because that kind of work goes on all the time. We get no credit for it generally, just right. Like in your profession.
It's all the bad stuff.
Yeah, it's all the bad stuff. So that's the good cop story. So what's shaking on the NP is in this week?
This week on the NP is in, we're going to talk about my favorite food.
Cabbage.
Dark chocolate.
Oh.
Oh. I was listening to a podcast. It's Dr. Mark Hyman's podcast. If you don't know who he is, he's a functional medicine MD. So I really like him. Mm-hmm. He had Dr. William Lee on, who also he does a lot of studies on food for functional medicine.
You haven't talked much about your studies. How's your certification for functional and integrative medicine going?
I love it. Of course, I'm ready to be done with it because I want to start, you know.
Yeah, doing it. Yeah. So these guys are also practicing in functional integrative medicine.
Yes. Okay. You should look Dr. Mark Hyman up and take a listen to his podcast. But anyway, on this particular clip that we're going to play for you, they're talking about cacao. Take a listen.
And just like the circulation, there are foods that you can eat for your circulation and your stem cells that boost it. And the idea that we can eat foods that stimulate our regeneration to me is one of the most mind-blowing, exciting things that are out there. And one of the best foods is actually cacao, plant-based food. Cacao that's actually used to make chocolate.
Yeah.
Right? So dark chocolate, obviously. So
wait a minute. This is a big one. Chocolate regenerates stem cells?
Cocoa. cacao.
Cacao.
So the plant-based polyphenols, the flavanols, in this plant-based food. So if you were in South America, so
yeah, I was in Ecuador. We literally cracked open this big thing. Right? We ate the thing raw. It was amazing. Okay.
So let's demystify it, since you and I both know. Look, if anybody has heard about, you know, think about chocolate is made, dark chocolate's made, all chocolate has some cacao in it, except for white chocolate. Cacao actually comes from a plant.
Yeah.
It's a football-like shape thing.
Yeah.
It could be brown or yellow.
Yeah.
When you shake
it.
And
there's white cacao. And it's
kind of heavy. You shake it, you can feel something inside it rattling around. When it's ripe, you cut it open. There's all these little chestnut-like looking things inside it. Each nut, each bean actually has a little white rim of kind of sweet, sour fruit.
Yeah, it's yummy. You can eat it.
It's delicious.
Yeah.
Absolutely delicious. You can mail order the cacao right to your home.
Yeah.
Okay. From places like Miami, I think there's a place that sells it. And then it's that nut, the seed in there, the bean, that actually is dried and
fermented.
It's like
fermented. a coffee bean.
And then roasted. And that turns into what is the core ingredient that goes into making chocolate. And dark chocolate has more of it. The flavanols, the polyphenols are in that bean. It's plant-based.
You know what a great hack is?
What?
Cocoa nibs.
Okay.
Roasted. So they basically kind of break up the cocoa bean after it's roasted into these little nibs, and you can put them on anything. You can eat them as a snack. They're a little bitter, but they're really amazing, and they're just pure cocoa. Yeah.
Okay. So studies have been done to show that the flavanols in cocoa stimulate stem cells to come out of your bone marrow like bees in a beehive in your bloodstream, and they go out and they find wherever it needs to be repaired. If it's in your heart, they'll fix it. If it's in your liver, they'll fix it. If it's in your skin, they'll fix it. And so we can eat foods like high flavanol cocoa in order to be able to actually get the stem cells to work a little bit better. Now, how do we know this actually functions, it works in people? Well, clinical studies have been done with high flavanol cocoa to show that in like men who are in their 60s with heart disease, they could actually have 2 cups of dark chocolate hot cocoa a day for a month.
Yeah.
And they doubled the amount of stem cells in their bloodstream, and their circulation improved measurably.
Did I just hear what I thought I just heard?
That's what you heard.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. And I want to make 2 points about it. One, Hershey's chocolate doesn't count. Don't go buy up a bunch of Hershey chocolate trying to...
What about Kit Kat bars?
No. This is dark chocolate. Or, like he said, you can just order the beans. So that's number one. And number two, it's so fascinating how well food can work as medicine. And we need to start looking at that a lot more. Your body needs nutrients. And if you're not getting the nutrients, you're not going to be healthy. That's it for the NP is In. Happy wellness.
It's your girl, Texas Titty, with another fun fact about Texas. Do you know where the king of country music, George Strait, is from? I'll wait. I'll give you time. Nope. Not New Hampshire. Nope. Not California. Nope. Definitely not New York. The great state of Texas, in a little town called Poteet, Texas. The king of country music. Nobody's better than George Strait. I'm Texas Tootie, proud mom of a Texas law enforcement officer. Back the blue.
And in the Erie Day People segment this week, we have part one of a two-part series on living and traveling in Alaska. I have my good buddy, brother police officer, John Mendoza on the line. John, how did you end up moving to after your retirement and now living in Alaska?
When my wife and I were dating, and this was back, we got married in 2007, and so it was around 2005 when we first met. You know, she asked me if I would like to go to Alaska, that she used to live up there, and I said, yeah, I'll go up there with you. I said, but here's the deal, because, you know, I'm an outdoorsman and stuff. I love the fish and hunt. I said, when we come back, you're going to go on a whitetail hunt with me. And so that was the trade-off between the two of us. And when I went up to Alaska, I thought it was so unreal. I mean, you know, I'm going around up there. You go around the bays. What they call that is going around an arm. And then you'll go up into the mountains. That's called a pass. So you have to go through a pass. And you're passing all sorts of streams and rivers and lake, you know.
So how do you travel when you're going through the pass and the narrows and all that? Are you on foot? Are you on an ATV? or what do you do?
No. You're in a vehicle when you're doing this. When I started looking at it, I thought, this is where God put his hand on the earth, pushed down, the mountains came up between the fingers, and the rest filled in with water.
It looks beautiful. I've never been, but
it's just so unreal up there, except for the winters. The winters get pretty downright cold. It got down to minus 50 out at the cabin this year.
Minus 50.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So a typical day, you're in your cabin. Tell me how you start a day. You wake up and then what?
Well, you know, you might wake up a couple of times as you're sleeping so that you can go put wood on the, you know, in your wood burning stove, depending upon, how cold it is out.
Do you have electricity up there, John?
I run everything on solar. Yes. Yeah.
Everything runs from solar.
Everything runs off of my solar. I have two batteries that hold quite a bit of energy, and the sun just keeps them charged.
Do you consider yourself off the grid? Is that what I've heard that term, but I've never talked to anybody that lives off the grid. Is that what you're doing?
Yeah. It's, you know, it all depends who you talk to. Some people who live off the grid don't even have solar, you know, and literally their cabin is lit by lanterns and stuff like that. Water is trucked in or coming from a small river or a stream or creek or some sort. I truck my water in. So basically, the only thing that I'm reliant on is the initial setup, if you will, gas for the generators in case I need a generator, something like that. It depends who you talk to. Some people say that's not living off the grid. Some people say, oh, yeah, it is living off the grid.
So do you have a television there?
Yeah.
So you have satellite. You can kind of keep up with what's going on. You're not in the dark or anything.
No, we're not in the dark. We can watch TV. You just got to be careful because, you know, when you're running your electric, if you do run it to a TV, usually if we watch anything, it's over a laptop or something.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
But those screens are lit up and they take a tremendous amount of energy. So from time to time, you may go check on your batteries. Especially if you're doing this before you go to bed, because you don't want your refrigerator shutting down or a freezer shutting down because you've used up all of your energy. If that happens and you have to go out and plug in your generator to charge your batteries back up, and then in the morning the sun will take over and start charging your batteries.
How close is the closest grocery store?
13 miles.
Okay. That isn't terrible.
No, it's not. No, it's not terrible. But all that's there is a very small store. It's expensive. I keep coolers in the truck and stuff like that. So if we have to pick anything up, generally you don't want to be running into town where the grocery store, there's a grocery store, a gas station, and a little hardware store. And that's pretty much it. If you really want to run into town, well, that's going to be about a 45 to 50 minute ride just to get into town where there's, you know, grocery shops, maybe, if you know, some malls and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But
can you share what you're near? I mean, obviously you don't want to pinpoint, but
if you go by plane, you could probably get to me in about 25 or 30 minutes if you fly by bush plane. And that's only because the bush plane, you can fly over the bay. Otherwise, you have to drive all the way around the bay to get to where I'm at.
What's in your fridge right now? What's in your freezer? Stuff that you have personally harvested off your land?
Yeah. Halibut, rockfish, salmon, cod. I don't have any moose meat or anything like that, but generally some of the people that we know, if they get a moose, they'll give you. See, that's the thing about Alaska. When you go and you hunt, generally it's your family and then your friends and other people in the community who get some of, some of what you bag and stuff. So
how many people do you know around you?
Where my cabin is, there might be, oh, not even a dozen cabins, but some of those cabins, their owners haven't been out there for many years. And then some cabins, an owner may show up once a month, or maybe just show up on a weekend or two out of the month, and that's it. So when I'm out there for the duration and just go out and do things on my own, hike and fish, whatever.
What kind of game are you getting when you go out to hunt?
Well, we have moose rut at the cabin, and we had the moose rut last year happened at our cabin. It was pretty awesome to watch. We had four cows and three bulls right at our cabin. So we didn't go outside for about 4 hours because they were chasing and fighting, and that was really, really cool.
I've never seen a real moose in person, maybe at the zoo. Are they're massive animals, right?
Yeah, 2,000 pounds.
And have you taken one?
No, I plan on it this year if everything goes all right. But, you know, once you get one down, then that's when the work starts.
I was about to say. So tell me about dressing and preparing that for consumption. I mean, what kind of work is that?
It's a tremendous amount of work. It's probably going to take you an hour or two just to skin that moose out. And you do it where they lay because they're impossible to move. They're so heavy. A full-grown bull moose weighing 2,000 pounds is right at about 7'2" at the shoulder. Mm. So they're a very large animal. And
does that limit how far away from the cabin you will take your trek or your hunt?
Well, yeah, there's a couple of reasons for that. A lot of times when you're up there, you're walking on that tundra or that muskeg up there, and there's a lot of holes in that. You're tripping and you're falling. And that's why most hunters up there will hunt from like a road or a path of some sort. That way they can get a quad in or whatever utility vehicle that they're going to use to help get them out. And they'll have a little cart behind. It's called a meat wagon, and it's covered and you can lock it, and that's what your meat goes into to protect it from any game from getting to it, you know, whether it be wolves or bears or, you know, nasty wolverine. But if you really go in the woods and you're back there by yourself and you get a big one, man, your work is cut out for you. Yeah. So
what does moose taste like? If you tell me it tastes like chicken, I'm hanging up.
No, it doesn't taste like chicken. It's a cross between beef and buffalo. It's not bad. It's actually really, really good.
Is it something you would seek out with other choices available if you were at a buffet and you got your chicken, you got some pork down here, you got some beef and some moose? Would you get the moose?
I'd get the moose.
Really?
I love wild game.
How do you prepare it? How do you fix that?
Just like you would any other red meat. The only thing is when you get wild game, you can't cook it as long as you do a store bought meat.
Why is that?
You know, that's grain fed, corn fed, you know, plus they have whatever.
The store-bought stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So wild game meat will have a tendency to dry out if you cook it the same time that you would a red meat that you buy at the store. So you need to really pay attention to it as you're cooking, because it's very lean. Very lean.
What made you decide? I know your wife invited you to go up and take a look at Alaska. You know, that's where she grew up. How did you guys arrive at the decision to move there, to live there?
Well, you know, it's funny that you asked. We had a friend up there where our cabin is. And he's got a cabin just a little further back than mine. And he and I hit it off as pretty good. And he and my wife and I, we talked, and he asked me, you know, if I could get a place up there close to him. And then I get a phone call out of the blue from him one day saying, hey, one of the neighbors is selling their cabin up here. You know, he's asking this or what have you for it. And said, you know, we'd really like to have you in the community up here. And you know, my wife.
So you were invited. He basically said, hey, you're a squared away guy. You're a nice guy. Come live up here with us.
Yeah. We went and looked at it and we liked it. And we bought that cabin. I think this is our seventh year. And I was out here working in my garden and got a phone call. And I'm like, somebody from Alaska is calling me. I don't know the number. It was the owner of the cabin. And he said, hey, you know, I need to know if you're interested in the cabin. And I said, you know, I turned to my wife because that was her dad's dream to have an A-frame by a lake. And I said, hey, he needs to know. Otherwise he's putting the house up, you know, this cabin up on the market and everything. And I said, do you want it? And she said, yeah. And that was pretty much a wrap right there, you know? So, but it was a lot of work getting the cabin. I mean, we had to paint it. We ripped the old roof off and put on a metal roof on it. I upgraded the solar system on it and put a new water pump in. And he used to run the water out of 50-gallon drums. And now I have 250-gallon tote that we run our water out of, both for our shower house and our cabin.
So you, for people that understand the times, and we're going to talk about your faith, because that is worth hearing. We definitely will ask about your testimony, but for folks that are not off up in Alaska like you, how can the average everyday Joe or Jane, you know, we get up and go, we go to work and we come home to our families, but we should be doing something in case in case Kroger up the street or HEB is closed for whatever reason. There's something that happens, and the way we've depended on getting food and water and clothing, other stuff that we need. You know, I want to talk about prepping a little bit. I know you know. Can you kind of list what preparation for something that we hope never happens? Can you get our minds together and how to prepare?
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest thing that you can do, and I don't think I've ever heard anybody talk about it, is being mentally prepared for what may happen. When you're not mentally prepared and something does strike, whatever it may be, say a grid goes down or a tornado hits your area, God forbid any of that happen, something tragic, you know, such as those, why most people fear is because they weren't prepared. So if you prepare for it mentally and know what you have to do, and maybe even some of your supplies take a hit, you're still of sound mind. You know what you need to do. So your basic things are, you know, you got to have food on your food in your stomach, clothes on your back, and a roof over your head at some point, right? Food is including water. So you should always have some water stashed away. I've got several cases in my basement of bottled water stashed away. Mm-hmm. But I know most people probably don't realize it, but even if your water went out at your house, you do have a water source at your house that you can get water from. And did you know that?
No. What is that?
Your hot water heater.
Oh, tell please talk more about that.
Yeah. You can go drain your hot water heater.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So depending upon how many gallon hot water heater you have, you might have that much inside your hot water heater.
So
that's a source. So don't panic. Think about what you have at hand that you can use. Don't be trapped like most people. They think inside of the box. You've got to learn to think outside of the box.
That's awesome. That's really awesome.
Improvise, adapt, and overcome. Those are sayings that we had in the service. So, think outside of the box, improvise, adapt, and overcome.
Okay, the water heater is a source of water. Never heard that before. Obviously, you want to keep some water readily available. What else?
Mm-hmm. Enough food. I've got, I don't know how many months of food, maybe half a year's worth of food.
So I'm seeing, I'm seeing a lot. You see it on Amazon, different places, these survival kits, you know, 24 months of food and such. Do you recommend getting kits like that or just buy some canned goods and stick those in the basement?
Well, canned goods don't, some of the canned goods don't last that long. You have to pay attention to the expiration dates, you know, of what you have, because certainly if something goes down, Ken, and say an area gets hit really bad, just say it's some sort of grid down type of thing, and you eat some sort of food that is bad, where do you think you're going to go to a doctor to?
Good point.
You see what I'm saying? So
yeah.
People need to pay attention no matter what. Yeah, you might be able to go past the date a little bit and stuff. We all know that we've had things that were expired that we've used before that was past the expiration date, but try to limit that as much as you possibly can, you know, so that I don't have to be dealing with some sort of catastrophe or whatever you may want to call it, and then have to deal with an illness on top of that.
Good point.
Because you're going to be stressed mentally, and you're going to be stressed. If you are stressed mentally over something, it is going to wear on you physically. So what we need to do is we need to limit as much of that as we possibly can.
And mitigate it with preparation. Gotcha.
Yeah.
The DNCP is brought to you by Liquid Mana IV Hydration for high performance. Everybody loves the immunity packs, vitamin packs, hydration packs in the Woodlands, Conroe, Willis, New Waverly, and Huntsville, Texas. The Doc and Carolyn podcast is for entertainment purposes only and the exclusive property of DNC Media, LLC.